And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello. Today is Wednesday, April 26th. Aaron Rodgers is here. That's right. Aaron Rodgers is here. Rangers, Isles, Devils all fighting for their playoff lives. The Knicks, that's right, tonight they moved on. They're on to the next round. The Nets, they went out in four to the Sixers. We got the Yankees and Mets dealing with injuries but trying to play well. The NFL draft is tomorrow. Join us now as we take you on a ride through the world of sports with the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren. I'm here with Kevin. You can listen to us any way you get your podcast. Please like, subscribe, post some stuff on Facebook because we want to hear from you guys. We're going to start it off with Aaron Rodgers. That's right. The trade finally is done. The Jets get Rodgers. They get the 15th pick in this draft in 2023. They get a fifth round pick in this draft. The Packers, they get a 13th pick this year. They get a sixth round pick this year. They get a second round pick this year. And they get a pick next year that is conditional based on if he plays 65% of the offensive plays. It goes from a 2 to a 1 if he does. Kev, talk to me about Aaron Rodgers coming here.
The Jets have a quarterback. Love it. So psyched for Rodgers to be here. The press conference, we're recording this Wednesday. Rodgers had the press conference today. It's the first Jet player press conference for a new signee or new trade since Tim Tebow back in 2012, if you believe that.
Wow.
Everything Rodgers said in the press conference, you love it. Sounds like he's in here for hopefully more than 1 year. It really sounds like he's thinking, you know, at least two. You know, the draft picks, we all figured they were giving up a 2 this year. Swapping the ones, whatever. As long as one of those tackles is still there. We actually moved up from a 6th rounder to a 5th rounder. That's a nice little trade-off. The 2nd round pick, conditional next year, that looks like a 1st. I think we, you know, if you want to really nitpick, yeah, you would like to have been a little lower to start than the 2 and easily attainable to move up to a 1. But you know what? Damn it, we have a quarterback. If we had a quarterback last year, we would have been in the playoffs. We have a quarterback now. You know, Rodgers had a down year last year. He threw for 3,700 yards. That would be 4th all-time on the Jets' single-season list. He had 26 touchdown passes. That would be tied for 3rd on the all-time Jets' single-season list. And that's a down year for Aaron Rodgers. I am so psyched for this trade. I am so psyched to have a quarterback in here. J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. I can't wait for the season to start. Darren.
But wait, before we get to Darren, I just want to throw some at you. That is, you know, the conditional pick for next year, it is not going to be a top 6 pick. So, well, you know, I know there's a lot of people out there complaining. It's a 2nd-round pick that goes to a 1st-round pick if he plays 65% of the plays. And if he plays 65% of the plays, chances are that pick is between 20 and 32.
Okay? We're hoping it's number 32.
Well, listen, we all are hoping it's going to be 32, but you're projecting it to be somewhere between 22 and 26. If it goes to 32, fantastic.
Yep.
So here's the thing, right? We haven't had a quarterback. The best quarterback we've seen in the last, I don't know, 2 decades, far for half a year. Pennington was probably the best quarterback we had. Hurt his shoulder. Couldn't throw a ball. When we were behind, there was no chance. Mark Sanchez was not very good. Geno Smith all of a sudden looked good this year, but, you know, even still, was not a good Jet quarterback. You know, we've drafted badly, tried everything we could. This is a guy, and again, he's not young. I'd love to if he was 34, we wouldn't have been able to make this trade, though, so let's be honest. Fact of the matter is that all of a sudden the Jets' relevancy has just flown through the roof. Now, an 11-6 season is like the low end of expectation right now. I'm not saying that they're going to definitely be there, but you know what? You're sitting there looking at this team as a 12-5, 11-6 team right now, which we haven't said about the Jets in forever. So this is it's huge. Did you pay a lot? You did. But the thing is, if he plays 2 seasons, it doesn't affect me. If he plays 3 seasons, it's a win. If he plays 1 season, it's like damn it, we got taken advantage of a little bit, but hopefully we had one good season. But if he plays one season, it's because he got hit, he got hurt, most likely, or he just doesn't want to get involved in it anymore. He won the press conference. Doesn't mean anything, but it means something every time anyway. I don't know. I was excited about it, Kev.
If he plays one season and it ends with the Super Bowl, that's fine.
Okay, if you were the only one alive out of the three of us when they won the Super Bowl, you were a couple days old back then. So
yes, I was.
G, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I mean, if he only plays one season and you guys make it to, I'll take it back a little bit, but you make it to the conference finals and lose, it's still a big win. I mean, the Jets are going to be very relevant right now in the NFL. Definitely in the NFL, in the AFC East, but they're going to be a big relevant team now just because he's here. And, you know, Kev said it, he puts up some of those numbers and this is going to be a fantastic team. Darren?
The team now, the stress for this team, the pressure immediately goes to one Robert Saleh. Douglas has done the job. Okay. If he is able to draft a first round tackle of some sort, he has more than done the job. Now we don't know what Robert Saleh is. We all like him. He looks the part, the whole thing. Hasn't done a damn thing. So all of a sudden now Rodgers is here and Saleh's got to prove that he knows how to coach these guys. They brought in Hackett. That was a genius move to get this done, to make sure that Rodgers had someone he was confident in. He made a little statement about Wilson today where he's going to make my life miserable on the field and I'm going to make his life easy off the field. And, you know, people are like, what does that mean? What do you mean? What does that mean? He's going to learn how to practice for me and he's going to have to sit back and watch me. That's what that means. It's nothing crazy. I don't know why everybody was so confused by it. But the simple facts of this, the Jets have gotten relevancy right now. I'm going to be staying up late. So are you, Kev. We'll be watching primetime games, which we're not used to. We used to one Thursday night game against Jacksonville every year. Every now and then, maybe they throw a different team at us, the Colts, some kind of crap. This is actually a real, real, real schedule we're going to face where we're going to be expected to do something. We haven't had this kind of excitement in a long time, not since Rex Ryan. And, you know, whether you liked Rex, you didn't like it. I happen to like Rex a lot because he gave his personality. What Rodgers does is he's an elite Hall of Fame quarterback with accuracy beyond anything that we've seen ever. And and suddenly the Jets have expectations going into the 2023 season. And I, for one, am as excited as you are, Kevin. Go.
You know, the Jets off of last year, they probably need another defensive tackle, probably need a little bit of depth in linebacker, probably need a safety, one more safety. But they've got the makings. We know how good this defense looked last year. And the fact that they are not under the gun to almost have to play shutout defense to give them a chance to win is going to free up that defense a hell of a lot. You're not going to have the defense going out there again after another three and out.
Just the offensive skill positions are set. I agree. You know, especially if Breece Hall comes back right, suddenly there's no weakness on the offensive skill positions. Do I love that we re-signed McGovern?
Yeah.
I know we're not going there right now. Not necessarily, but he's better than nothing. I wanted the kid out of Tennessee that they released, the Alabama center. I'm blanking on his name for a second, but Ben Jones. I would have preferred Jones over him, but they were both free agents for a little bit, but we didn't get him. So now we get McGovern. I still like to draft somebody. That's beside the point. To play center. Yep. That's about it.
You know, McGovern can always play guard. I think he'd be better off as a guard. And after the injuries last year, you can't have enough linemen. So between we'll talk about it later, but they've got two centers that look like they're gonna be available right at that 43rd pick. Schmitz out of
Minnesota.
They've got some options there. Let's see what they do.
Yeah, the thing about it, and obviously we talk about it, you know, Elijah Vera Tucker is a unicorn. He can play guard, he can play tackle. Becton's in the best shape of his life, but we don't know what that means because he hasn't been able to play. Dwayne Brown's 106 years old, but you can still roll him out there. He can still do a suitable job. Tomlinson, you paid a lot of money to, so he's going to be there, and he's going to be your left guard, whether we like it or not. So there, and other guys got to play last year that weren't necessarily starters going in that proved themselves. So, you know, there is going to be some depth.
I thought Mitchell looked pretty decent at right tackle there last year.
He did. He got run over a little bit down the stretch, but you know what? I mean, he played up well up to the first injury. The second injury, I think it was a little off, but
yeah.
But you know, I thought he was good. There is some depth. We'll see what happens. But right now, it's about Rodgers, onward and upward. Jake.
All right. We had a little excitement tonight. Excitement yesterday with Rodgers. Excitement today as the New York Knicks move on in the NBA playoffs. They take care of the Cleveland Cavaliers, 4-1. Tonight was 106-95. Brunson is just incredible. If anybody is unsure who the best player on the court was for the series, boy, did he show you that it is Brunson for sure. Randall was out with an injury, but it didn't matter. Brunson just had this team rolling all the way through. Kev.
You know, you look at the way the series went, it's almost like the Knicks play a different ball than everybody else. You look at the four wins. They gave up 97, 79, 93, and 95. When you're seeing an NBA where the scores are always, it seems like every score, the winning team's got 110, 120. The losing team has 110 every night, it feels like. The Knicks, and part of it is Tibbs. He's a little bit more of an old-school coach, believes in the defense.
To be honest, all of it is Tibbs, by the way. It's his coaching style. They play defense.
Yeah, it's the only team that I feel like plays defense. And you know, now the season is – a success.
All three of us can agree now. All three of us can agree.
When I was thinking about that, when they were up 3-1, I said, yep, they have to win the series now. And they went into Cleveland tonight. And, you know, Darren and I replied to the post on our Facebook page. We both thought Cleveland would show up at home tonight and win, and we'd be looking at game 6 at the Garden. The Knicks surprised both of us tonight and won game 5. And you got to love it. And it's on to the second round for the first time since, 2013 or something?
And only the second time in 20 years. In 2 decades, anyway. You know what I mean? Only the second time in 2 decades.
Yep. But you're right, Gino. Brunson, boy, what a one of the best free agent signings in at least 2 decades by the Knicks. Hart, of course, incredible. Was a big trade. And Hart was such a huge trade.
Oh,
mid-season.
Defense, rebounding, passing, and he could put the ball in the hoop.
Yep. They're really becoming a fun team to watch.
Darren, any Knicks?
Well, when you think about Tibbs, right? The thing that makes him a better coach for a team like this than some of the other teams he's been on is when you don't have a legit superstar and you're able to play team ball, that's where Tibbs is going to excel. Okay. Tibbs is not the coach of a superstar and getting everybody else to meld in. Tibbs is a coach where Jimmy Butler plays as hard defensively as anybody else. That's where Tibbs was great with Chicago. That's what he's got going on here. Barrett shut me up tonight. He actually shot well. I still don't think he can shoot, but he shot well. Barrett played really well. Donovan Mitchell couldn't have come up smaller in the last 3 games. He played a little better in the fourth quarter tonight, but they traded so much for this guy. Draft picks and talented players. And what ends up coming out is that he was small in New York. He did not play well at all. He shot like 35% from the floor. I mean, I don't have the exact stats in front of me. It was like 14 for like 38 or something like that. He was not good. And the thing was, Hart was on him, Barrett was on him, and they gave him trouble. He had a hard time getting his shots off. And even with Grimes, who might be arguably their best defensive guard, not playing in the last couple of games. The Knicks, like Kevin's been talking about for the last couple of months, really good team ball, you know? Would you call Brunson a star? Yes. Do you call him a superstar? Probably not. But you call him a star. You know, the term superstar, you know, goes to like 5 guys. It goes to like Giannis, you know, goes to Jokic. It goes to certain guys. Brunson is not a superstar, but he's a star. And he's become the Knicks' best player. This Villanova connection has really worked out well. If Randle is the thing about Julius Randle statistically is if you look at his fourth quarters, he's been awful all year. He's not a big player in a big spot. And I think he chokes up a little bit. I know he hurt his ankle tonight, not trying to crucify him, but you'll notice that Brunson scores more of his points in the second half generally, and Randle usually has a good first quarter. That's the way this Knicks team is kind of rolled, but really impressed with the way they closed them out in five, a 4-5 series with the five winning in five games, not often done in the NBA. No. You got to tip your cap. G?
So, awaiting them. Go ahead, Kevin. You had another point?
I was going to say, one other point, Mitchell Robinson showed up tonight, too. 13 points and 18 rebounds. That was big for them.
Him and Hartenstein have both played well in this series.
I think I said a couple weeks – I said about 2 weeks ago, it's almost – the two of them combined for the 48 minutes. And you look every night, they put up about 12 points combined and about 15 rebounds combined. It's just a matter of who's going to play more minutes, who's going to get a few more points, rebounds. But every night, you're guaranteed from your center position at least 12 points and 15 rebounds, it feels like.
Yeah.
And they're all the garbage points, which you need when you're playing team basketball. They know not to shoot from outside the lane.
No.
They know their role.
And you look at a guy like Evan Mobley, who really came up soft in this series. He's a top five pick in the draft. He's a big time athlete. He was intimidated by the defense that the Knicks were throwing at him, and that was without Randle playing tonight. And team win, team series win. Brunson's certainly the orchestrator. But, they're getting multiple guys, and you pointed out a couple months ago, Kev, they're getting multiple guys putting up 20 points in a night, and that's what makes this team different. Mitchell Robinson, he can't shoot from further than 5 feet, but you know what? He gets every rebound that he goes after, it seems like, and he dunks the ball with authority. Good enough. We'll take it.
So, awaiting now. The Knicks are waiting for a winner to come out of the Milwaukee-Miami series. Right now, Miami's up 3-1, and they are down 6 points at the half as we talk right now. It could be really fun to have the Knicks hosting the Heat for games 1 and 2 at the Garden in the next round. This could get really fun. Listen, we know Giannis was injured. He came back. Miami just looks like they're on fire right now. Jimmy Butler is like he can't do anything wrong in some of these games. The way they came back in that last game, it was unbelievable. Darren?
To score 56 points on 28 shots is about as efficient as you can be. 19 for 28 from the floor, put up 56. Milwaukee led. Giannis playing. Milwaukee led through three. Miami blew the doors off them in the fourth quarter at home. Now, tonight is in Milwaukee. We're looking at a different – it's different. Milwaukee's up 6. If they have the lead in the fourth quarter, then they hold on. Better chance, I would guess, but it doesn't mean anything. But the simple fact of the matter is that Jimmy Butler's become and you thought he could be the best player on the court on every given night. And, Giannis, had 20-something points, probably back bothering him still a little bit. But Jimmy Butler, 56 points on 28 shots – that's what you want to see. That's what it's all about. When your superstar is efficient, plays defense, gets to the line, comes up big in big spots, you can't ask for more than that. Knicks Heat, renewed rivalry would be awesome. You know the Knicks are rooting for it. Giannis owns the Knicks. They don't want to play Giannis.
Yeah. It's interesting. The three series you had, the Knicks, the Heat, and also the Lakers. Three teams that were the quote-unquote underdogs in the series. All one game on the road, lost game two on the road, okay? Come back home and hold serve at home to go up 3-1. Knicks have won. We'll see what the Heat can do now. And later on tonight –
the Grizzlies beat the Lakers, all right.
The Grizzlies did beat the Lakers. Yep, they did go fine on that one.
Well, they said that
the Grizzlies paid a lot, 3-2.
Yeah, Josh scored 45, I think. They made it 3-2. But
yeah, still, looks like a long way to go. But you know, they'll be going back to LA for game 6 in that one. And we'll see what happens here in the second half. Already 69 points, 69-63 at halftime. Real defensive battle there.
The NBA, that's what it is.
Then the other shocking one was Atlanta, Trae Young's 3. Right near the buzzer there to upset Boston in Boston in game 5 to force a game 6.
Boston, I think, left 13 midway through the fourth.
Yeah.
Atlanta went off.
We all had the Celtics winning in 4 or 5. We figured this is not going to be a very difficult series. And now they're looking at game 6.
Nah, Trae Young, I mean, last game, Tatum went 1 for 11 from 3. They did a few things to help, but they still, I mean, again, they still put up 115 points in the game or something like that. Trae Young put up 38 and was enough to win it. I thought that Atlanta looked dead after the first two games. They showed no life. They had a little spark in game 3. You were impressed with it. There it was, 2-1. They didn't embarrass themselves. They're losing 5. There you go. Yeah. Boston comes right back, wins game 4. Now you really feel like it's cemented to go in 5. And then they're up by, what are they, 109-96 with about 6 and change to go. And suddenly Atlanta just starts hitting shots. And, you know, they got a guy. I mean, it's the Steph Curry school. Trae Young shoots like Steph Curry. Anytime inside the half-court line, he lets it fly. This is the way it works. And when they go in, dangerous.
Okay, and in the other series, Philadelphia swept Brooklyn away in 4 games. Really not much to say. Out west, Denver took care of Minnesota 4-1. Phoenix took care of the Clippers 4-1. And the other series is playing right now in game 5. Sacramento and Golden State tied 2 games apiece. Sacramento up by about 3 at the moment. Kevin,
easily the best series going right now. Easily the best series of the first round. Every game's been somewhat competitive. Steph has the brain fart in game 4, calls timeout, gives this technical, gives Sack a shot. Somehow, some way, the ball ends up in Harrison Barnes' hands of all people. Guy shooting 3 for 11 at the time. And the typical NBA the way it is now. Down a point. Let's take a 3.
Yeah.
What? Why can't anybody set up from 15 feet, 18 feet? Make the shot makeable. I don't get the NBA at this point. Everybody has to shoot a 3 when they're down 1. I don't get it. I'll never get it. The mid-range game, the Larry Bird game, the Michael Jordan game, the Dr. J game, gone.
Gone.
It'll never be back. Blows my mind. But, you know, that's the best series right now. That one is a very compelling matchup. We've had a lot with Draymond Green, who his antics just drive me a little bit crazy overall. But this is these are 2 relatively evenly matched teams. We're talking about the defending champ against a good Sac team. Kev,
any comments on any of the series out west, Kev?
I think out west, you know, you had the Clippers, just the injuries just got to be too much to overcome. After winning game 1, they just had no chance against Phoenix. And Nuggets proved that they were the best team out west all season by taking care of the Wolves in 5. Wolves got game 4 at home in overtime just to save off the embarrassment of getting swept. But Denver pulled off game 5 at home, and they're advancing. It should be a fun series next round. Nuggets Suns.
Do you guys think this could be the end of Kawhi because of all the health and injury problems?
I certainly hope not. He's such a – I mean, here's the thing. The Clippers – I'm not saying they win this series, but this series goes 7 if Kawhi's healthy.
Oh,
what's
I agree.
Happening is because Booker goes off for 40 points plus in the last couple of games, and it's just because Westbrook can't cover everybody. You know, you can only put Westbrook on one guy, and you're already playing without Paul George, right? So you put Paul George back there with Westbrook and with Kawhi, and that big 3 is as good as anybody else's big 3 in the West. I don't care what team it is. I don't care if it's Phoenix. I don't care if it's the Lakers, but not that they're that good. I don't care who it is. This big 3 can play with anybody, but George is hurt, and then Kawhi goes down, and Westbrook already can't shoot. But now you got him sitting there just playing defense and having to become the only scorer. There's really no chance for them to come in. They actually played every game gallantly. They really played hard. Monty Williams had those boys playing. But But I don't think it's over for Kawhi. I think he'll come back and bounce back.
Okay. All right. Any other NBA points before we move on, guys?
Just one quick thing on the Lakers. I mean, you know, Austin Reeves was a nice player at Oklahoma, but my God, he has looked really good. I mean, listen, I saw him play in Oklahoma for a couple of years, put up big shots, was able to hit shots, but man, does he look good in the Laker uniform. I hate the Lakers, but wow, this kid seems to be in the right place at the right time. And, you know, to be honest, game four was there for the Memphis Grizzlies. Morant came up small. I mean, Desmond Bane did everything he could, but Morant did not have a good game. And if they can't get Morant, and I know he was hurt, but he played game three and he played game four and obviously game five. And he played great in game three, but he played great when the game was over. The Lakers went out like 33-11 on him. And all of a sudden, Morant scored like 20 points in a row in the fourth quarter, but the game was already out of reach. It was good to see him kind of bounce back tonight. Again, now I ask you a question, both of you guys, whichever one wants to answer to both of you. When you look at a series like that, where now Grizzlies come back and they make it 3-2, is all the pressure on the Lakers in game six or all the pressure on the Grizzlies in game six?
I think it's
interesting because you know that they're the lowest seed. That's why I'm asking.
I think it's still the Grizzlies. And I think it's because if the Lakers do not have LeBron James, as much as I can't stand LeBron James, a basketball player, they have LeBron and the Grizzlies don't. So I think the pressure is still on the Grizzlies.
I'm gonna disagree with you. I think the pressure's all on the Lakers. They're gonna go back home now. They were up 3-2. And if Anthony Davis decides to not have a good game, he decides not to play, he decides to be disinterested in the game, and they lose, and they have to go back to Memphis to play game seven, then I think all the pressure's on Memphis at that point to win game seven and end this. But if LeBron up 3-2 with a game in their own building can't bring this home, I think the pressure's all on the Lakers right now.
It's funny. I get torn back and forth, which is why I asked you guys the question. It's just because you feel like if the Lakers don't win six, they don't win seven. It doesn't mean they can't win seven because they did win game one. It's not like they can't win in Memphis. It's not like Memphis is world beaters, you know? But it's it's very intriguing for these teams that are on the talk. Same thing will happen if Milwaukee wins tonight. Does Miami have to close them out in six?
Yes.
Because will they beat them in yes. Milwaukee in seven if Giannis doesn't win it? I'm just saying they will have to play game six like it's their season. This is the 1986 Mets all over again, Kev. We don't want to face Mike Scott, right?
Right.
We have to win game six against Houston.
Even if it takes 16 innings.
Like. This is what it feels like, right? We're not scoring a run against Scott. We have to find a way to win game six, even if it goes 16 innings, even if Billy Hatcher breaks my heart one more time and it's a homer. You still got to do that whole thing. Just a thought on the NBA. But I got to be honest, I've been watching a little bit more of it this season, and I kind of enjoyed some of the playoffs. We'll see what happens going forward.
Yep.
All right. Let's move over to the NHL. Four series have played five games, and they're all 3-2. No one has moved on at all at this particular moment in time. All of these series feel like they're close. We're going to see as we get down to the next couple of games what happens, because we have a couple of 3-1 series that are going to pan out in game five tomorrow. But at the moment, we have no one advanced. Islanders came back and are now down 3-2 going home for game six. The Rangers and Devils tied 2 games apiece. Devils going back home for game five. Kev, you want to take it away with the Islanders first?
Sure. They surprised me. I didn't think they were going to go down to Carolina and win, I'll be honest.
Me neither.
I thought after game four, and I hate to harp on it, but my God, and I've watched enough games. Every game I hear the crowd chanting, referees suck. They're so inconsistent in the playoffs right now. You know, the game four, You know, the Islanders come out after winning game three. They come out flying in game four. They get a borderline goaltender's interference on Parise. Carolina then gets, you know, I think it was Pulak gets the boarding. It was definitely a boarding, definitely a penalty. Carolina scores on 5-on-3. About 6 minutes later, or less than 6 minutes later, the Islanders have the power play, and then Burns cross-checks Barzal. And we're thinking, oh, great, 5-on-3. All of a sudden, here's Wes McCauley deciding, oh, no, we're going to call Barzal for embellishment. I don't know what the hell embellishment was.
He got thrown into the boards.
He got checked a little bit coming up into the zone. He was a little bit off balance. You know, on his feet, but a little off balance. And then he gets cross-checked from behind into the boards, and he embellishes. And all of a sudden, it's still 4-on-3. I mean, 5-on-4. And the Islanders, with their impotent power play, don't score. Matt Martin takes a bad penalty at the end of the first period. Carolina scores early second. Game is over. The Islanders did not play well in that game. Don't get me wrong. After the first couple of minutes, they did not play well at all. But if they're given the 5-on-3 that they deserve, you would have hoped they could have scored there and maybe changed the game. That being said, they came back and wow, did they play a good game last night. Survived. Felt like the entire last 3 minutes were in their own zone. Carolina pulled the goalie with about 2.5 left, which I was shocked it was that early. Definitely the decision worked for Carolina. The only thing they didn't do was put the puck past Sorokin. Sorokin stood on his head. But it was the right decision because they spent the entire time in the Islanders zone, and I'm shocked that they did not get the game tire there, and we're back to game six in UBS.
The coach definitely went for the kill there. You could tell he was like, we're scoring. We are not going down in this game, but Islanders prevail. Darren?
I mean, I know you point out the referees, the inconsistency, but the Islanders have also made a couple of dumb penalties in every single game until last night. The Martin penalty to end the period the other night in game four was disgusting. There's just no reason for that, Martin. There's no reason for it. It's just dumb. You've been in the league way too long. You know exactly how to play. You're the line of energy. But I do feel that sometimes they rely on that line a little too much, and I need to see more of the Horvat-Barzal line than I'm seeing on a nightly basis because they have to find a way to put the puck in the net.
Yep.
The other inconsistency go ahead, Kev.
I just say I'll agree with Butch Goring's line. The penalties calling the Islanders have been penalties. It's not like they have not gotten away with stuff for the most part. It's the lack of consistency, the lack of balance in penalties called on both teams.
Oh, I agree with you. Carolina's gotten a lot more of a benefit of the whistle as a guy that is not an Islander, Ranger, or Devil fan, a guy that roots for the Flames. So I'm just saying, but the Islanders have made some dumber penalties than Carolina Hurricanes have. They have made the Carolina hasn't put themselves in a position where you had to call everything. The embellishment was crap because there was another play shortly thereafter, and they could have called embellishment just the same way, and they didn't. So it was like, come on. We were texting at that point back and forth on Sunday afternoon. But I think that if they can stay out of the penalty box and get that first line playing just a little bit more, you need to see a little bit. Nothing against that fourth line. That's the energy line. I get it. And they can roll out all four like no other team in the league. And I love the way they do it. But you got to get Horvat and Barzal on the ice more. Horvat wins every damn draw. I've never seen a center this good. I mean, not in a long time. Not since, you know, the days like Jan Eriksson with the Rangers. You know, they put him out there, he just wins the draw, then they skate him off. You know, I mean, that kind of fun stuff. They need to put that line out there because that line has to figure out how to gel. But if they – and Ronta had never lost a home playoff game – nor won a road playoff game. He did them both back-to-back. Now, again, the question becomes, who's the pressure on in game six? It's got to be on the Islanders. It's got to be clearly on the Islanders. But if the Islanders win game six, now you suddenly feel like they can steal game seven because Ronta's been great, but I think Sorokin's better. Yep. It comes down to something that minuscule in hockey. It's just a bad hop, a bad bounce. Your goaltender can win a game for you standing on his head like Sorokin did the other night. G?
Okay, and In the other local hockey matchup, the Rangers are playing the Devils. Rangers win the first two games in New Jersey. Then we go back to the Garden, and New Jersey wins the next two. And to prove home ice means little as little could be in these NHL playoffs, the home team has scored one goal in each of the four games, just so that we see. Rangers won 5-1, 5-1. Devils won 2-1, 3-1. Game five coming up. A lot of excitement with this series. Both teams really giving it. I mean, I watched some of it the other night. This is a damn good series right now. Yep. All the jitters that I talked about from the Devils coming out of that first game are gone. You could tell right away as they hit game two and into game three. Even though they lost game two, you could tell the jitters were gone after that first game. 2-2 going to game five. Darren, what do you think?
Akira Schmid. Okay. None of us knew who he was, really. Let's be honest. The Swiss goaltending factory that's produced the greats of Martin Kerber and Jonas Hiller and David Abishier. Really, there's no hotbed, is my point. But this kid has come out of nowhere and changed the series. Then they asked Lindy Ruff, what made you feel confident that he was going to be able to change it? I didn't have any confidence. I didn't know. We put him out there. Love the honesty of hockey coaches. They just say it. They just come out and say it. They just whatever. But this has been, bringing in Schmid, the bigger goalie, has really helped, obviously. But the thing that's really helped this team is the same thing that plagues the Islanders. Kreider owned them in the first two games on the power play. He literally would just sit up there and deflect. He deflected four pucks in. Well, three, and then the other one was a regular goal. But the fact is that if they stay out of the penalty box, they have a shot to win the series pretty easily. The Devils are a really exciting, fun, fast-skating team. The Rangers need to slow it down. And for some strange reason at home, they did not do that. They allowed the Devils to skate a little bit more freely than they did in New Jersey. This is what it's going to come down to. Who's going to control the tempo and the pace? And if the Devils can be smart enough to keep themselves out of the penalty box, because they cannot contain the Ranger power play at all. It's been really, you know, no game has been overly competitive except for game three. You've kind of knew who was going to win all three of the other games pretty much. I mean, game four, you could have said the Rangers make a little comeback. But you know what? The fact was, the games haven't been great, but the intensity and the excitement in the crowd has been great. I don't know. I can't imagine this series stays as like every road team wins it, because even though the Devils are the best road team in the league, we talked about that throughout the year a lot. Yep. But the Rangers aren't the worst home team, so it's really hard to imagine that. We'll see how it goes. I still think the Rangers find a way to win this series, but I think Akira Schmid and the Devils not taking the penalties has really turned the series around. Kev?
Yeah, we all three of us thought the series was going to go long, either 6 or 7 games. It's definitely going to be that way. Like you always say, Darren, it's never a series until the home team wins a game, right?
Opposite of what we always believe in this, yeah. In a 7-game set.
Great job by the Devils to put those two losses. And they were totally outmatched the first two games, losing 5-1 both games. Great job by them coming back in the Garden and getting the two games against the Rangers. Much as I'm rooting against the Rangers as an Islander fan, there's still something that if the Rangers can pull off this series, you know, you're starting to get back some 1994 vibes with the Knicks and Rangers starting to make some moves in the playoffs. And, you know, for those of us who remember back then, New York City was alive in 94. And it was a fun time to be watching sports in New York. And
oh, to be young.
Oh, 30 years ago. My God, that was never mind.
The Yankees were just starting to turn into that team a little bit as well. Yep. I mean, we had the strike and everything, but, you know, I mean, but Yankees were starting to get better. I mean, there was a lot happening at that time.
Yep. We won't talk football.
No, there was never anything to talk about. The Jets were not anything to speak of. And the Giants were on the downward spiral. Yeah,
Jets were already into the Rich Kotite years.
Oh, those were fun.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let's not play Neil O'Donnell in preseason. Let's save that secret weapon for what was it, like a 38-7 thrashing against the Broncos in week one. Anyway. Yep.
All of the other NHL playoff series are close at this point. A lot of these could go either way, no matter what happens. I think for me, the biggest surprise, and I'll throw it to you guys, the biggest surprise for me is Boston is up 3-2. They were up 3-1. Florida came back and won in overtime tonight to force it to game six. And that was kind of the one we were all pointing at that we thought, oh, Boston could just knock this out in four games.
Yeah.
Other than that, for me, everything else is close. Any comments on any of the other series, guys?
Go first, Kev.
Yeah, I was going to say, the Kings-Oilers, Gino and I both thought the Oilers would win easily. Oilers were up 3-2, but 3 of the 5 games have gone to overtime.
Yeah.
Just to show you how competitive that series has been. Lots of goals scored in that series. The Leafs, certainly, especially after losing the way they did 7-3 to the Lightning in game one, they've turned it around, won 7-2, and then took both games in Tampa in overtime.
Yeah.
So they've got a chance to win game five tomorrow night.
Yep.
Or probably tonight by the time everybody's listening to the podcast. Vegas, another team that lost game one and has come back and won 3 straight. So they're up 3-1. Again, going home, hoping to close out that series. Another series that's surprisingly close, Avalanche and Kraken. They're 2-2 right now. Split the two games in Colorado, then come back and split the two games in Seattle. And in game five, as we speak, it's 2-1 Seattle, late second period. Be a shock if they go up 3-2 here. But all the pressure, of course, would be on Colorado to save their season in game six. And they better, because I need them in the hockey pool.
I need the Islanders. I thought I was done yesterday.
Yeah. But, Gina, like you said tonight, the shock. No, the other Boston team in the playoffs, 3-1 at home, chance to close it out and lose in overtime. Florida led 1-0. They led 2-1. They led 3-2. Boston kept coming back and tying it. And in overtime, it was a giveaway by Allmark to set up the game-winner goal by Tkachuk in overtime. And all of a sudden, that series is now heading back to Florida 3-2. Do you know any other comments?
I'll make a couple.
Darren?
No, I said the series was going to go 5 between Boston and Florida, and I said Florida's better than we think. But I didn't think they'd find a way to win the series or anything like that. Reason was that they won last year. They had the most points in the East. Florida's not bad, and they had a Tkachuk. I mean, they actually got a little bit stronger in some areas. They have no goaltending, which makes you nervous about Florida. I know Bobrovsky's okay.
Bobrovsky played great tonight.
I get it.
But it's one game. I know it's one game.
You don't sit there and say, oh, God, I don't want to face Bobrovsky tonight.
No,
I
mean, no.
You never sit there and say, oh, no, they got the guy in the pipes that I'm nervous about.
Yeah, but he was great tonight.
Talking about weird refereeing, so about 2 minutes into the Stars Wild Game 5 yesterday, they called a major on a trip that was a kind of a questionable call. And game misconduct, and Minnesota loses Foligno, which is a big loss for them. And Dallas scores right away. And then, I mean, Minnesota didn't score last night, so you can't say that they would have won the game. But it was a questionable call. So there's a little bit with that. That series is 3-2 in the battle of who really is the best team from Minnesota, whether it be the North Stars or the Wild. L.A. was like a couple minutes away from going up 3-1. And then Edmonton ties it up and then beats him in overtime. Same thing with Winnipeg. They were up, about to go up 2-1 against Vegas, and then Vegas tied it up late and they won in overtime. So those series kind of gone that way, the way they are. And like you said, the Kraken are up 2-1 with under 3 to go in the second right now. And Colorado playing without McCaw, which is definitely obviously a big loss for them. But, you know, the series have all been very competitive. I mean, let's be honest. There really hasn't been any team that's been run out. The thing that was most interesting, though, to me was the Leafs. Is this the year they get through the first round? They were down 3 goals with 11 to go, tied it up,
yeah,
and won in overtime. It wasn't like wasn't like it was a game that was seesaw. They were down 4-1 with, like, I think it was 10:36 to go. Then they started putting the puck in the net against, you know, arguably one of the best goalies in the world. And again, you know, with Victor Hedman sitting back there and a bunch of other superstars on that Tampa team that knows how to win, with Cooper, who I've seen enough of already. Not that I hate Cooper, but enough of Cooper. Let's see some other teams in there. But wow, you know, Toronto's showing me something. I know every Islander fan in the world hates him because Tavares is on the team, but Toronto's showing you something in that series.
And the only game they lost, and here's why I question NFL refereeing sometimes. This is a story that came out years ago. There was a hockey guy in Toronto area by the name of David Frost, and he was accused of sexual assault against former players up in the OHL. One of the players who filed charges against him was Michael Danton.
Okay.
Testifying on behalf of Danton was his teammate Sheldon Keefe. So he's testifying against Frost. Sheldon Keefe is now the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. The referee in game one was Wes McCauley, who is the brother-in-law of David Frost, who Keefe testified against back in 2004. How can you have that conflict of interest in a playoff game?
You really can't, actually. It's ridiculous that they actually, that nobody saw that. That nobody picked up on that. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, my coworker brought that up to me, so I had to do the research on it. I went,
I didn't even hear that from anybody. This is the first I've heard that story, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, I remember reading about the story because what Frost was accused of, he was acquitted.
Oh no, I remember too. I remember the story. I didn't know any of this Wes McCauley stuff.
I didn't know that either until I read. Like I said, my coworker told me about it, and he did the research and go, how's this guy refereeing a Toronto Maple Leaf game? And McCauley's the one that called the embellishment on Barzell.
So now we all hate McCauley. McCauley
so
sucks.
Now we hate McCauley. He's Angel Hernandez, Phil Cuzzy level in my books.
Gosh, craziness.
All right, so NFL draft is tomorrow night. We're going to spend a couple minutes on baseball and then move to the draft because the draft is tomorrow night. A couple of things to note in going on in baseball. Tampa's off to a huge start at 20-5. The other big surprising start has got to be the Pittsburgh Pirates at 17-8. Two New York teams are both 14-11. They're both 5-5 in their last 10. You know, a lot of teams are just – stuttering at 500 right now, and that seems to be the way it's going to be. Got some good teams like the Braves at 17-8 right now. Any baseball points you guys want to touch on? We're going to keep it brief, and then we'll move right over to the NFL draft.
I'll let you talk.
Real quick on the Mets, they had a really good West Coast trip. Lost the last two in San Fran. You go, okay, they still went 7-3. Swept Oakland, took 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers, and split the 4 games with San Fran. And if you're a Mets fan, sign up for going 7-3. Hallelujah. Then they come home and face Washington and lose 5-0 and 4-1. And right now with Senga being the last man standing of the original starting five that they had planned in the offseason, it's a tough sled right now. But even beyond the pitching, right now, the last week, you've got Marte, Lindor, and Alonso hitting a combined under 200. If those three are not hitting, you're not going to win. Nimmo's still getting on base near 450. McNeil's getting hot. He's up to 300, over 400 on base. Beatty's got his average up over 250. A little soft right now, but at least he's starting to get the average up. Alvarez got his first home run the other night. He needs to play. I'm tired of seeing Nito trying to hit. if the kid's up here. I mean, his defense has been good. I mean, it's a small sample size, but – you know, they've gotten them pretty highly rated so far in, like, the things like pitch framing.
I love these stats.
I know. Like I said, small sample size. But I mean, just give me an idea that he's not butchering it behind the plate.
I agree. I just love all the stats. That's all.
I know. But they you know, without the three main guys they're hitting, they're not going to win. Good thing is Scherzer will be back, it looks like, for the last of the game against Atlanta on Monday. And sometime next week should be Verlander against Detroit. That'll look a lot better than Jose Budo and Well, actually, Lucchese might stay in the rotation. Peterson's in, on the bubble here, the way he started off the season. True. Well, that's a quick take on the Mets. You guys have anything on the Yankees?
Yeah, Yankees real quick. Hell is officially frozen over. The Twins have won a season series from the Yankees for the first time since 2001.
Wow.
The Yankees also have the least runs of any team in the American League East. Toronto only slightly ahead of them. So if I would have told you before the season started, it would be Tampa, then Baltimore, then Boston, followed by Toronto and the Yankees, you probably would have laughed at me. But that's where we sit right now. The thing is, when Stanton's not in that lineup and you knew he was going to get hurt, and I'm not going to pretend like we thought he was going to stay healthy, that lineup just does not look nearly as good. And if Judge isn't carrying the team and hitting, there's just not enough. I mean, so far what? Torres, decent. Rizzo, good. LeMahieu starting to hit. Volpe had a few hits today, so now he's like up to 230. But, I mean, still a long way to go. Judge hitting about 250. I mean, this team is just not hitting, and they're not getting anything out of the other guys that you were hoping. Like last year, Trevino started the year off really well. You're not seeing that kind of thing. Franchi, despite the home runs, can't even get to the Mendoza line. There's a lot of problems with the Yankee offense. They scored 12 today, but you know that was more than they scored the last four games combined. I mean, you know, so they need to start putting it together. Cortez has been pretty good. Cole's been great. The pen's been okay, not fantastic. I didn't like the pen starting the year. You know, it's if the Rays have lost two in a row now, the Astros took them the last two, so yep. Now suddenly they look like maybe they'll lose a game here or there. I picked them for the under, so it was a good wise pick by me at 20-5.
May still gonna be the real test for them.
Start playing everybody now. The thing about it is the Orioles have been much better than I think that any of us really thought. The kids have really come alive on the mound. You expected Rushman to hit. Or what did you call him, Kev? What was his name?
Hutchinson.
Hutchinson's been good. All the Gunner's been good. I mean, they've been good, and you expected the bats to hit. The pitching has been better than I expected. You know, the Yankees, if they don't start hitting, it's a tough division for them. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
My only thing is I can't stand that we're seeing a lot of Willie Calhoun and Franch Cordero and Isaiah kind of Falefa now playing center field for the Yankees.
Made two great catches last week.
I know.
He can't hit.
There's a lot of changes that need to happen on this team. You know, you have no Hicks. We don't want Hicks here. We don't want Calhoun here. We don't want kind of Falefa here. We don't want – there's too many guys that we just don't want on this team right now that are playing. So
you need Bader and you need Stanton to come back. That changes the whole complexion. And if you're going to bring Peraza up, let him freaking play. I shouldn't have to – what do I need him as a pinch runner? He's my number three prospect. I know he's not Volpe. He's still the number three prospect in the organization. Put him in the freaking lineup. Second base, third base, I don't care. DH him. Put him in center. I don't care. Let's see what the kid can do. There's a reason he's the number three prospect on the organization. And it's not that he's going to be a defensive replacement or a pinch runner in a big spot. Play him. These other guys suck, and they're proving it. I don't know. Yeah. Early baseball. It's April still. Let's remember.
Yep. We'll get more into baseball. But go ahead, Kev.
I've got two pitchers' notes. Robbie Ray, elbow surgery on his flexor tendon in the elbow. He's out for the season. Madison Bumgarner with a big contract released by the Diamondbacks. So with the dip in his velocity, he's not really hitting 98 miles an hour on the fastball anymore. Is his career done? Think back to what he did. He was always a good regular season pitcher and stepped it up in the playoffs. And who can forget that 2016 playoff run when he carried the
Giants
to the World Series that year. That relief outing, then one day's rest, throwing five innings, dominant relief there. Great, great, great postseason pitcher.
When you think back to that team and you think back at guys like Bumgarner and Lincecum, you thought they'd be there forever.
Yep.
You know, you really did. They had these great young arms, and you were like, well, Lincecum was the guy that got more of the hype.
Yeah.
And it became Bumgarner that became the better pitcher. Anyway.
Yep.
All right, so NFL draft tomorrow night.
I just want to make one comment before you go. Has there ever been a draft with less hype than this draft leading up to it. Have you ever felt no buzz about a draft as much as I feel no buzz about this draft? Maybe I'm crazy. I feel like there's absolutely no buzz about this draft. I don't know what you guys think.
Do you think, do you, I agree, by the way. Do you think it's because even the quarterbacks that are projected to be good are not projected to be great? Because usually you got somebody projecting one of these quarterbacks to be great, and I don't see anything out there projecting any of these quarterbacks to be great.
Maybe that's it. I don't know. I just don't feel like anybody's talking about this draft. I feel like the mock drafts are kind of benign. There's nothing special about them. I feel like there's nobody flying up draft boards that people are talking about. I feel like there's no one fun to watch highlights of. I don't know, Kev. I mean, is it just me? I just feel like this draft has the least buzz of any draft I can remember. And I'm a draft junkie, as you know. You've sat with me at drafts, Kev.
Oh, yeah.
We've gone to Radio City. We've sat there and harassed people in the third and fourth round when everybody else leaves. We've been there. I mean, this has no buzz.
I think part of it's the quarterback. Part of it, I think, just the overall. I was reading an article on ESPN, and somebody was talking to some of the scouting people around the league, and the consensus seems to be that in a typical year, they've got like 20 to 25 guys with first-round grades that you say, yeah, these are the first. This year, most teams are saying they've got like 15 guys who really are worthy of the first round. It's not a strong draft at all. When you look at the quarterbacks, you can pick apart the top four quarterbacks.
Easy.
And I think that's part of it. You know, you look, yeah, Carolina traded up. They're probably taking Bryce Young, but you know, anybody who follows football looks at Bryce Young and says, is he big enough? He's 5'10", 200 pounds.
Well, so it's funny. I mean, Carolina makes this huge trade to go to the top. And even at this moment, it's clear we don't know who they're going to pick. And usually at this point, there's a lot of speculation out there about who the pick's going to be. We have no idea who that pick's going to be.
I mean, I think we all, with our expertise, we all like CJ Stroud a little bit better, I think, than Young.
And I think Young's going to get the spot, by the way. Everything I'm reading, not because I know it, it's just because of what I'm reading.
We're all reading, yeah. We've got no insight to anybody.
Here's the thing. You watch this draft. There's no wide receiver that jumps off the page at you, right? The running back position no longer really exists. And even if there was, Bijan Robinson, as good as he is not someone that jumps off the page at you. The best player in this draft is probably the kid Anderson out of the defensive end. You know, he's probably the best kid out there. Maybe Jalen Carter out of Georgia, the kid out of Alabama, the kid out of Georgia, right? But this kid Tyree Wilson's climbing up the board. None of us really watched him that much. I mean, did you see him play a lot of Texas Tech? I really didn't. No. I mean, I saw a couple games. I mean, and, you know, did I hear his name a few times? Yeah. Did I say, wow, this guy is going to be an NFL stud? I did not. And this guy, they're projecting as high as 3 now. Or 2, some people are saying. I can't see that. But 3, it looks like it could be if they go him over Anderson. Well, I've not seen, anything like this. Anthony Richardson, everybody wants to find the next Josh Allen that could complete 50% of his passes in college and be a great pro. That's not easy to do. This guy can't complete passes. And everybody's talking, you hear him as high as 4. And Hendon Hooker is undersized as well. And now they're talking about him as a late first-round pick, and he's hurt. You don't even know what he can do. It's nuts. It's really nuts.
Well, you're looking, we're all 100% sure Carolina's going quarterback. Now you start.
Otherwise, reading, you don't make that trade. Yep.
Now you start reading, and Houston, they're talking, may not go quarterback. They're looking at maybe Anderson or Wilson up there at 2, which would be a surprise.
You know what, Kev? It's a good point, because if you're Houston, right? The only thing that's forcing you to take a quarterback with that pick is if the GM is worried about his job. Because if you don't love whoever the second quarterback is, you know you're not going to be good again for another year. Take one of the other guys at one of the non-QB positions you like, and then worry about taking the quarterback next year.
I mean, it's still a fairly new regime in Houston.
Yep.
If they clean house. So if they have the patience, if they're not in love with the guy at number two, take Anderson. Take that guy who can anchor the defensive line. And wait till next year to draft your quarterback. And wait another year to start the clock on the rookie contract for a quarterback.
Now, we all saw him play. Would you take Caleb Williams over all three of these, all four of these guys, all five of these guys? Because I would. I think the kid at USC is better than all five of these guys we've been talking about.
Yes.
I don't even think it's that close. He can run, he's big, great. And he can throw.
Yeah. I'd be waiting for next year.
Yeah, the other thing with the buzz is, hey, listen, the Jet fan, we're not picking in the top 10 for the first time in forever, right? Giants aren't either, right? And we were more worried about if we were going to have a first-round pick with the whole Rodgers trade. So that might have made it a little bit less for us in that respect. But even still, I mean, slight quarterbacks do not always make it. I mean, the best one has probably been Russell Wilson, who was, what, a third-round pick? I mean, so it's not like these guys – I mean, Baker Mayfield went one. I didn't like it, you know. Whenever they go with these small guys, they don't generally make it. And as good as Bryce is, and he's good at his accuracy, is he going to be able to stand up to getting hit at this level? He's too slight.
I know height-wise are similar. Does Russ Wilson feel as small as Bryce Young, though?
He's thicker.
Yeah.
Just like Jalen Hurts isn't big, but the guy can squat 700 pounds. So you feel like he can handle a hit.
Hurts looks muscular. Bryce Young doesn't.
All right, let's talk about some. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, you know, so you're looking at the Texans, you're looking at the Cardinals, the three, who you feel like is not gonna take a quarterback because they've got Kyler Murray.
They're taking a defensive player.
Nobody seems to be clamoring to go up to the Cardinals at three to get a quarterback either. You know, you don't feel the buzz about that either. You know, it sounds like everybody's sitting there going, nobody's worth giving up the extra draft capital and move up a few slots. You know, go ahead, Carolina. Go ahead, Arizona. Take your defensive end.
Well, but don't you think some of that is that with the thoughts at the moment that the one is going to be a quarterback, but there may not be a quarterback taken with the second pick. There may not be a quarterback taken with the third pick. Don't you think as this starts progressing, these teams are going to hold off to see what starts happening before they start making any kind of move? I mean, if you're Indy is sitting,
the Colts are going quarterback at four. I think that's clear.
That's what I was saying. So the first pick goes, and let's say it's a quarterback. The second pick goes, and it's not a quarterback. Okay, now you know Indy's taking a quarterback at four. That's when all of a sudden, after the second pick, you may have some teams trying to move up.
Yeah.
But until you know, because you know, let's say they like Stroud and Young goes with the one and then Anderson goes with the two and all of a sudden CJ Stroud is sitting there. You may have some teams try to move ahead of Indy because they know Indy is going to grab a quarterback at four. But let's actually keep down that path for a moment. How many quarterbacks do we think are going to go in this first round? Are we under the impression that it's either four or five?
Yeah.
I agree. Here's the thing, that the funniest guy is Levis. He's probably the most pro-ready, and you're hearing he's the guy that may not be the one that makes the first round, too, from some people.
Unless everybody's blowing smoke, you know, you hear about him to the Colts. Sounds like a done deal, but you never know.
Yeah, I hear that, and then I hear him at 31. I mean, not 31, 30. You know, you hear him all over the place because, again, you know, to quote draft day, none of his teammates go to his birthday. He's just not popular. I don't know what it is.
So we think those quarterbacks in any particular order are going to be Young, Levis, Stroud, Richardson, and then potentially Hooker late in the first round. Those are the five, right?
Yep.
Okay.
What's going to be interesting is if the quarterback starts aligning and does Seattle like somebody at five to sit on the bench for a year to develop while the way for Geno, because Seattle's plan next year is not to tank. Seattle's plan is to be a good team. Do they take their quarterback, who they feel might be the quarterback of the future, at five? then again, if you start sliding down a little bit, you know, you've got a team like, you know, Tennessee, the Titans there at number 11. Do they start getting antsy looking for a replacement for Tannehill?
Well, they drafted Waynes last year, but it doesn't look like they're sold on him. I wasn't when I saw him.
He did not look good.
I'm no scout, but he didn't look like he could throw a pass to me or you.
Yeah.
And we don't move that quick.
All right, give me who you guys think is the best offensive player, not a quarterback.
You know, it's tough because of the different positions. You know, Bijan Robinson is going to be a good running back in the NFL. I think he's going to be a really good running back in the NFL. The guy that I'm hoping slips to the Jets, and it may not be the best guy, I'm hoping Skoronski slips to the Jets because I think people get very nervous about arm size and arm length. Last time the Jets got a tackle that had short arm length, his name was Elijah Vera Tucker. I was okay with him. I think that they overrate these stats so much. I don't care if a guy can jump out of the gym. I just don't want him to be a football player. Skoronski looks like a football player to me. That's the tackle I'm hoping falls to me. I don't need another guy that's overweight that I have to watch his weight every year. I just need a guy that's going to be tough and nasty. That's what I'm kind of hoping for. You know, the receiving thing, I mean, you know, Flowers is really good. I mean, there's a bunch of guys that are good. Nobody jumps out of the page at me. I go Bijan Robinson. That's my pick.
Kev? Okay. Kev?
Again, just, you know, wide receiver, I think Smith and Jigba is probably the best one there from Ohio State. You're right, Robinson is clear-cut the best running back in this draft. But the best offensive player, not a quarterback, looks like it's boring. It's going to be the offensive tackle. Whether it be Skoronski or whether it be Johnson or Jones.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, even the tight end, the kid Meyer out of Notre Dame's really good. I mean, there are good players. I mean, you know, if you told me just watching college football – that Andre Hyatt was good. I would have thought Andre Hyatt was like a monster out of Tennessee, but he projects as the fifth best receiver or fourth best receiver. I like the kid Flowers out of BC as much as I like in Jigma Smith. I always pronounce his name. I think he's got really, I think he plays really well on a team where he was keyed on. Ohio State had a lot more talent. That's the only reason why I like him a little bit better.
I'm hearing these two tight ends are moving a little bit on the draft board between Dalton Kincaid and Michael Meyer. Any thoughts on those guys?
I like Meyer a lot.
Meyer is real good.
Okay. What's your best defensive player on the board right now? Is it Anderson?
I think that's be Anderson.
For me, it's Anderson. Jalen Carter's this 1A. I know he's dropping because of whatever. But he could dominate interior game. Whenever you have a defensive tackle that can get pressure and also stop the run game at the same time, we saw how important it is as a Jet fan watching Quinnen Williams. This is that kind of player, in my opinion.
Okay. Any sleepers in this draft you guys are curious in as we get into that late first round?
I like Joey Porter Jr. I like the pedigree. Yeah. I liked him at Penn State. I'd like to see him end up as a Steeler because I just think it would be kind of fun.
I'm kind of hoping.
I know you want to see him on Washington. I'm not disagreeing with you, pal.
I do because I do think he's going to be pretty good.
He's one of those guys I really, really like. If I was going to look at one other guy, what was the guy? I mentioned Zay Flowers, who I like. I also like Lucas Van Ness, the edge out of Iowa, who seems to play with a lot of, like, speed. I see him going anywhere from, like 12 to, like, 25. I mean, that's how weird this draft is. But I think Van Ness could be that guy that does some – that can do some decent things. That's the other guy I like. Kev?
I think – no, those are the two names I've seen out there, too.
Okay. Let's talk some Jets. So – What do you guys think their needs are? What do you think what do you want them to do? Give me some. Well, listen. If I look on some of the sites and look at the research, they're saying their top three needs are offensive line, center, and offensive tackle, center, and safety. Is that what you guys both think?
Yeah.
Definitely the top two. The third is either – it's down the middle. It's either the safety. They need some linebacking depth. I still think another defensive tackle to play next to Quinnen. They're a little light there. But the biggest need is offensive tackle. And I would still look at the second round, either Tippmann or Schmitz there at, with the second pick. I still want a center.
All right. Well, let's assume Saransky's off the board in the first round at your pick. Who do you guys want them to take?
It always depends on who's still left. I mean, I'm looking at maybe Darnell Wright out of Tennessee might be the guy. You know, I don't know. I mean, there's not – I mean, the offensive line falls off after, the, you know, the top three.
It's top three.
Paris Johnson, Skoronski. If any of those guys are there, you know, those are the guys that we like. You know, Broderick Jones is the guy I'm skipping. I'm sorry. Those are the three biggies. The fourth guy to me becomes the kid out of Tennessee, Darnell Wright, and I think it's a drop-off. But the difference between 13 and 15 could mean the fact that we're drafting Darnell Wright. If that's the case, to be honest with you, Kev, I would go almost interior offensive line if I have a real star there, someone I really like, and I'd kick Elijah Vera Tucker out to right tackle.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have a problem with it at all. Because there are a couple of interior offensive linemen that you could look at, like Osiris Terrence, kid out of Florida, who's really, really good. I think he could be someone that you look at. Kid Avila out of TCU is probably a little early for him, but I think Osiris could be the guy that you look at. But the Jets have to go O-line. I don't like the safety position right now. We have two strong safeties and no free safety. I would like to see somebody, but that could be addressed in free agency as well. Or you could take a cornerback with cover skills that's getting a little older and move them out there as well.
Yep. If the three tackles are gone.
Yep.
Do they get Rodgers another weapon like Meyer?
You could do Meyer, but you could also get the kid out of wide receiver out of Ohio State. You can go receiver then. You can go receiver and actually release Corey Davis. You could go that way and get an upgrade over Moore and do that. You could also trade down and recoup some of the picks. You can go from 15 to 25, take another interior offensive lineman or a center and accumulate a second or a third or maybe both and kind of do that if somebody likes him. Yeah, Kev?
Because the Jets only have five picks this year.
But they added the extra fifth, but yes.
They have a one, a two. They gave up their three in the Elijah Moore trade.
Yeah.
To get the two that they traded to Green Bay. They have their fourth. And the fifth, they've got two fives, the extra one in this trade that they gave up their six in this trade. And then the seventh, they gave up last year in the trade to get a sixth rounder last year from Tampa. So they do need more picks. So trading down from 15, if those tackles are gone, I certainly don't mind seeing them trading down a little bit.
I mean, yeah, I feel that way. Right now, unless it's a guy I love, I'm trading down.
Yep.
Okay. And if you're the other local team, the Giants, they're picking 25. You think they're going wide receiver right off the bat?
They could also go offensive line a little bit as well. The thing about I think receiver is the need, but it's got to be something.
Cornerback. Cornerback's also a need. Center's a need. I don't reach for a receiver there. If if some of them start to drop, you know, get from Ohio State, the Flowers, a couple of other ones, if they start to drop down there, then you draft them. But don't reach for somebody who's got a second round grade down there.
Go for the quarterback. The guy that they get linked to the most. Addison seems to be the guy I've seen most out of USC. Yep. I don't know if he has a first round grade though.
Yep.
So
by the way, Kraken 3-1. By the way.
Yeah, that's all.
I saw three different mock drafts online, and they had the Giants. Two of them had the Giants taking a wide receiver, and one of them actually had them trading the pick and trading down. So, I guess we'll see what happens with that. An interesting rumor I want to just throw at you guys is a potential trade between Baltimore and San Francisco. where Lamar Jackson would go to San Francisco and Trey Lance plus two first rounds would go to Baltimore. Unconfirmed, obviously, but definitely out there in the ether at the moment. What do you guys
think? How good would San Francisco be with that move? My goodness.
Wow.
They're already good. Now, Lamar, without having that much, without having that much talent with him, would be ridiculous, I think. And I don't love Lamar Jackson as a thrower, but I don't think he's got to do much with that running game, the offensive line, the defense being as good as it is. Wow. Basically handing him the Super Bowl, I think.
Yeah, when I saw that, I kind of was like, ooh, that would be real. That would be real interesting to see. Any other NFL draft thoughts, guys?
Nothing for the draft for me.
Nope.
Okay.
No hype.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to go through before we sign off, Darren?
I got a couple things. Spring games in college football underway. Colorado had their first on the primetime. Deion Sanders. 19 guys after the game have already headed to the transfer portal. Good job by Deion keeping the kids motivated and happy. So many transferred before they even played this game, but guys that lit it up in this game fell apart. Unbelievable. They can't wait to get out.
41 since April 15th.
Exactly.
Portal.
19 since Saturday.
Yeah.
The Rockets hired Udoka as their coach now that the suspension's over from the Celtics. So that was interesting. And the Oakland A's are moving to Vegas, apparently. And Mark Davis, who did the same thing, went off on him. I don't understand how Mark Davis has the gall to go off on him, saying that he's killing the Bay Area. When you took a team out of Oakland and moved them to Vegas the same way. I'm confused. Yeah. This one stifled me a little bit. My last point was five players suspended for gambling in the NFL, four of them Lions, one plays for the Commanders, Jay. The biggest name is Jameson Williams, who was suspended for six games. And the second biggest name, a guy who played somewhat last year, was Cephas, who was suspended for the year indefinitely. They didn't say the year yet, but none of them bet on football, but they're taking it seriously with this gambling. Gee.
So I think they have to start taking all of this very seriously just to start deterring it from the future, because now that the gambling is becoming so easy to do, if you don't start deterring it now, trying to deter it 2 years from now is going to be a disaster. We saw Ridley get suspended. Now you saw these other guys get suspended. You know, listen, with the easy access to be able to place all these bets, they have to do all these things to deter it as much as they can. You don't want to see these. You don't want to see stupid suspensions because the guy put a $10 bet on the New York Knicks. But at the same time, if you don't start deterring it, it's going to just be a greater problem in the future. So, Kev?
Yeah, the only other note I had was from also about the portal. Alabama was not impressed with their quarterback in play coming out of their spring game. A name to watch in the portal now is Tyler Buckner. He was a Notre Dame quarterback. He got hurt early, came back for the Gator Bowl, and played well against South Carolina. Tommy Rees, his offensive coordinator from Notre Dame, is the new offensive coordinator in Alabama. Tyler Buckner is in the transfer portal. Does he go down there? He's got 3 years of eligibility left.
Could easily happen.
Alabama could have the replacement for Young.
In a weird thing, Villanova a couple of weeks ago hired Baker Dunleavy to be like a GM, because the transfer portal for college basketball and college football has gotten so intense that you really need someone that kind of oversees the whole thing. I mean, it is nuts watching the amount of players that go through the portal, the NIL, all the stuff that's going on. It's hard to keep track of your team. Now, listen, the coaches have free to go, so the players should have some freedoms and stuff like that. But it's bizarre. It's getting ridiculous.
Yeah.
If you look at college basketball, which I've been following daily, I mean, you've got some huge names going through, and it's just getting started. I mean, I know the players are out there, but we don't even know where half of them are going yet. And college football, same way, quarterbacks switching on a regular basis. This has become really, really intense. Oh, I had one other point too. Brian Reynolds signs an 8-year deal with the Pirates. And yeah, it didn't even seem that big. I mean, it was about 12, about $13 million a year. It wasn't like out of whack.
But I think it's the first ever $100 million contract for Pittsburgh, isn't it?
It is, but it was 8 years, 106. Yeah, yeah, I expected it to be like, you know, I thought Reynolds would get a little bit more, but it's an easy tradable contract as well if they feel like they still need it. Or he's not that expensive and they can keep him. So it's really a pretty good move for them.
Yep.
Okay.
Anything else, Jay?
No, that's it. I think we can wrap this up.
All right, Kev, anything?
Nope.
We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I got the signal of the squirrel from both Kevin and Gino, which means let's wrap this elongated show up. I'm Darren here with Kev, here with Gino, talking about the wonderful world of sports. A lot of exciting things happening around the New York area, so makes it fun for us. You know, it's Aaron Rodgers' time. The Knicks have advanced. The Rangers, the Islanders are still alive. The Devils are still alive. Only the Nets have really embarrassed themselves in the playoffs this year on the local side. But please follow us on Facebook. Follow us, and give us comments and give us feedback and tell us what you like and what you don't like. Download the podcast anywhere you can get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product or TuneIn or Spotify. Even go on Alexa and just say, play the Sports Kings from Queens, and we will pop up. But without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
This has been the Sports Kings from Queens.